Down to brass tacks. Is the caller who was there before the news still with us? Because it's important to have that person talk about this distinction between international reserves and central bank reserves. Look, at the end of the day, we got to go with what we have used consistently, import cover. All right? And the issue here is whether the import cover is adequate or less than adequate. Don't try to confuse people with other terms and stuff like that. Let's deal with that. What is it? The other point emerging from this whole question of the story that was at the back of the Nation newspapers about as it relates to NIS assets and that sort of thing. When I last looked at the actuarial review, which had been done on the National Insurance Scheme, you may recall that there had been a lot of discussion in Barbados about the fact that the government has been borrowing heavily from the NIS. People in the government have been talking about the importance of using Barbadian money to invest in Barbados. And there were suggestions that I heard from some that you couldn't get any proper return on the investment abroad, so it made sense to invest in Barbados. The actuarial review spoke of the importance of diversifying the portfolio of investment that the National Insurance Scheme has. It essentially said that it was a dangerous trend to put too many eggs in any one basket. And therefore, it also spoke to something that had been raised by some people who were defending the government's approach to the way it was relying on the NIS. Because there were suggestions from some that, as I said, you couldn't get any proper return on the investment. But what I saw in that actuarial review was to the contrary, that we were indeed doing reasonably well in the investments that we had abroad. So if we are going to repatriate that kind of investment now, the question that it raises is, so what implications does that have for the whole concept of diversification? Because it is highly consistent with what we've heard from members of this administration who would have us believe that it is in our best interest to let them take the money and invest as much of it as we possibly can, if not all of it, in what they see as the areas that are beneficial to Barbados. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hey, Mr. Ellis, you sent me off on you.
Yes, I was asking you to deal with import cover. When we talk about the import cover for Barbados...
No, you didn't ask me that.
I am asking you that now. I asked you before you left, I asked you to tell me what was the situation when last we went to the International Monetary Fund
that forced us
to go there. Yeah. And what did that translate into when it comes to import cover?
Well, let me tell you what I went off and did. All right, you asked me so I went to 1991 to 1993.
Mm-hmm.
And looked at what the central bank's holdings were at the time. 161.4 million, 266.9 million, 286.5 million. So we don't need to talk about import cover. You know it's low when you hear those numbers, right?
I'm with the international reserves.
That's what I'm going to tell you now. The net foreign assets of the commercial banks were negative, minus 28 million, minus 14 million, and minus 8 million.
What are they now?
In other words, the commercial banks did not have the money to back up the trade that was going on in the island. And they needed that import cover, higher levels of import cover from the central bank, and those reserves were falling. So we were in more trouble then than we are now.
What is the cover from the international...
I can't tell you what the cover is. I don't know how they calculate. I don't have to take the imports and divide them by 52 weeks.
Where are the net reserves right now?
Right now? Right now?
Yeah.
You want what? Do you,
the last reserves that you have.
Let me give you what the central bank, what the central bank report, the last central bank report, end of December. I'll give you that. I could give you other things too. Well, let me give you that. Central bank, review that. Central bank, monetary authorities, $409.7 million. Commercial banks, $1.535 billion.
So in your judgment...
That's your last report.
The reference which has been made by the central bank itself to the falling reserves is really not relevant.
No. Don't misinterpret me at all. It is absolutely relevant. But what I'm saying is they are referring to their reserve holdings at 409 that need blustering.
And therefore, what aspect of the two of them, which one is considered to be the important to reserve cover?
To import cover. The crucial one is the central banks for reserve holdings.
You said it's the crucial one.
That's the crucial one. And that is what only becomes really important if the central, if the commercial banks' holdings are down like they were in 91, 92, 93. Because the central bank now needs to cover those imports. The commercial banks can't do it.
So before you get there, what makes it crucial? Before you get to what the commercial what makes it crucial?
Well, our balance of trade for one, balance of payments for one, and that is directly going to the
commercial bank. Essentially, you're saying it is crucial, but it can also be made even worse based upon what is happening with the commercial banks, right?
Of course.
But even in the absence of the commercial bank situation, it is crucial. Let me ask you this. Is it crucial enough that if it falls far enough, notwithstanding what is happening on the commercial banking side, you can be forced to go to the IMF for support?
You would have to because you have debts to pay $400.
All right. So that is the issue. So that's the issue. If you telling me that ultimately,
there are two different things. We are talking.
There are two different things. Listen, my friend, you are trying to confuse people because you are saying to me that irrespective of what. No,
it's a pity that you would think that I'm trying to confuse.
But you might not set out to do so, but you're ultimately maybe achieving
but
that.
What I'm trying to do is lay facts on
I the want table. To That's say what? To you that, yes, you have laid the facts. And the crucial fact that you have raised here is that as long as we are talking about the reserves that the Central Bank of Barbados has been speaking about this year and in previous years, if those reserves fall below a certain level...
Set to zero.
They don't have to fall to zero because when we went to the IMF, when last we went to the IMF, I don't believe they were at zero. Your point is that they are crucial.
Yes, they are.
And if they fall too low, they by themselves, irrespective of what is happening, what the commercial banks are holding, the reserves of the central bank will by themselves force us to have to take defensive action.
They might force us into default of foreign debt, yes.
Okay, great.
So
we're finished with the discussion then.
Okay, well, that's not an argument.
All right.
Right?
All right, sir, thank you very much.
All right, Mr. Ellis.
Good. Hello? Down to brass tacks.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
I'm well, too, Mr. Ellis. Now, Mr. Ellis, on Friday, I heard you waxing warm about oversight. So I'm here to give you some oversight today and also some insight. And I would like me to look at, you know, Miss Motley had made a pledge that it was too late in the term to make appointments, and if they make them, she is going to overturn them. So I want you to give me some insight on that there, too. Miss Ellis, before I get there, We was looking at some number one, some passes from your friend Wesley. So I would like me to go back to that there. I don't know if you have a problem with that.
You know, I have never been able to stop you from doing the things you want to do.
Right, good. No, Wesley had said that he would give us one path, and that is for health, which I thank him for, because, you know, the city health with the nation is
You should talk to my producer, who told me just now that he went to the hospital with his mother at 5 o'clock yesterday, and got at 2 o'clock yesterday afternoon, and got home this morning at 5 o'clock.
Well, you see, why to say to that? We just go to the health institutions that cropping up all over Barbados, pay them whatever they charge, they just do the best they can for you, and then send you down to the QEH.
Not all the time.
Not all the time, nothing.
There are times where you pay them for the service, and you get an efficient service too.
But yes, you also get a long wait too.
So I don't agree with you.
You don't?
No.
No, Mr. Ellis,
I don't agree with you. Because I myself have had to use services like that from time to time, and I can assure you that I have been impressed by the efficiency of it all.
The price you have to look at,
but the fact of the matter is that I'm unaware of having to experience any kind of long waits that you're talking about.
No, Mr. Ellis, I asked if you never had a long wait.
Where?
At the end of the private clinics.
In recent times, I haven't had that.
Well, I ain't talking about in recent times, I'm talking about ever.
Back in the 60s, yeah. No, I didn't do no private. But let me put it to you this way. I'm just pulling a leg about the 60s, because they didn't have that kind of service back then. I'm saying to you that in comparison to some of the things that I have experienced with the public health service, that has not been the case in the private healthcare in recent times that I've been exposed to.
Mr. Ellis.
All I'm saying to you is that I can't tell you, I cannot say to you conclusively that nobody has had a long wait at a private clinic. I can't say that, because there will be scenarios where, for one reason or another, that can happen. But I don't think that it is the norm within the private service to find people waiting as long as they tend to wait in the public service, especially, you know, in circumstances where the public service is saying to us all that it is only when you have a real emergency that you might not have to wait.
Anyhow, Mr. Ellis, it is not expected that the two of them would be on par for time.
All right,
so we can leave that there, right? And I don't want you to
let me nitpick, because
you want to get through these things with you, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, a dear Mr. Dickon was on, and he was able to give us at least one pass too. He said he would give us a pass for renewable energy. You, Mr. Ellis, you can find anything to give us a pass on?
Well, like other people, I think that one would have to give the government a pass on the work. Most of the work that has been done on the area of the alternative energy. I mean, by the same token, I must tell you that quite a lot of people, a lot of countries and states in the U.S. are really heavy on the alternative energy, Germany and other countries too. But I would give the government a plus in relation to that. I can't give you a plus in relation to things like transport service. I can't give you a plus in relation...
Mr. Ellis, I can't give you a plus
on the issue of how the economy has been handled
and the downgrades
that Barbados has had.
Mr. Ellis, respectfully, I don't want you to hog up the show. I just ask you to give me, if anything, you can give me a pass on. That's all I want from you.
I give you a pass.
You don't give me a pass, but I told you, Mr. Lickham already gave me that. That's what
you want something me. Other than that?
If you could find one of your own to give us.
Oh, dear. I really would like to think of something. What could it be?
Agriculture? Don't bother to hurt your head, Mr. Ellis. I'm going to give you something.
No, but I need to be fair to you all, you know. In all fairness, I mean, I would like to think that I could find something else. I mean, I am driven to a large extent by a deep concern about the macro picture and stuff. But by the time you finish, I'll find something else.
Good, cool. Mr. Ellis, me and you... exhaust housing, and you said that we got a by far better housing plan than them. So you mean not even that you can't give us?
No, I didn't. The truth of the matter is that it began that way, but what has happened in housing has been a little disconcerting. That is that they built a number of houses were built, and then a lot of them were left for a long period unoccupied. I think we are now seeing some improvement in that situation, where a lot of those houses are now occupied after all.
Mr. Ellis,
but I would say to you, yes. In general, yes. I would think that the administration could take a bit of credit in relation to that. Unfortunately, though, I don't think that enough of that happened in the last 5 years. That was driven by the Michael Ashley period. But I don't know that under Mr. Kelman's leadership in the National Housing Corporation, we have a lot to talk about.
All right, Mr. Ellis, okay. Let me deal with it from my perspective now, and I ain't going to only give them a pass.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give them first-class honors.
Okay.
So you sit back and listen.
I will.
During the 1999 to 2003 term, they started to build a complex called Country Park. And halfway during the 1999 to 2003 term, they left it there languishing. So it languished for a term and a half, Mr. Ellis. The half between and the whole term between 2003 and 2008. So, Mr. Ellis, that on election day 2008...
Country Park was finished before 2013, man.
We are talking about?
That wasn't finished before 2013?
Well, yes, Mr. Ellis.
What were you talking about? You were talking about the 10-year period?
The 10-year period, yes.
All right, so you can give them a pass for Country Park, and you can identify every housing unit in Barbados that was built in that period, between 2010 and now?
No, I can show you their building plan as against the... I don't have a building plan. And you got to give them honors, not only a pass, but honors.
You get honors for grotto and things too?
Well, people in them, so they're going to get honors.
No. That is not the only yardstick that you can measure them on that basis. But Valerie and grotto can be measured only on those terms,
well,
because people in them.
There you go. You know that Elizabeth Thompson got more names for houses than houses. You know that?
Well, you recognize that there are some aspects of the housing program that nobody can really take away from the Democratic Labour Party vis-a-vis what we saw from the BLP prior to 2008, which, as I said to you, is the proliferation of houses in many parts of the country. The downside of that was that people had to wait for an exceedingly long period, and I believe that some of them may still be in situations where they might not be occupied. But on the other side of that, there are some practices that people have been concerned about, and that Grotto Valerie project is one.
Mr. Ellis, things will be questionable. I don't have a problem with that. You know, Coverley?
Yeah. How many things you want to talk about, though? You know that you only got a minute. You got less than a minute now. I got to leave you now, and you can come back to me after the news, because they got to come and get set up to bring you the latest for 12:30.
All right, I'll give you a lot.
No problem. I look forward to having you then. Thanks. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. If you're joining us for the first time and missed the first part of the program, it's a pleasure to have you with us. And those of you who have been with us all morning, a special pleasure. Welcome.
Hi, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm still here.
Yeah.
Now, when we brought just now, I was looking at Coverley. And you know that there's a project on the right-hand side going towards the airport that was done under the previous government. And it was a tripartite project. The government put the land, prospective homeowner put the money, and the contractors build the houses. And it was such a fiasco that the incoming government had to look at another method of doing it. Because the homeowners suffered and suffered tremendously. And I am calling on you now, Mr. Ellis, to go and do a 630 10 years later. That's up to you. But the project on the right hand, on the left hand side going up now, have been done, then overruns, then nobody ran off. There's nothing that you can find to complain about. And probably more houses built there than they built for the whole 14 years. But that could remain there. Because remember, they rent out a billion houses and move into a billion office blocks. Remember that the change demanded a national housing to build office blocks. And we can take a look at office blocks now. They built two office blocks in 14 years. I ended up losing one. And they didn't only lose the one office block because they allow the debt to climb to the value, the cost of the building. And they had to put in two lots in St. Philip that was already committed to cover the office block. But conversely, I can show you that we built six office blocks in the R10-year term. And they only get two in 14, I lost one.
When you say you built six office blocks, these were built by central government?
They're built by the government.
How?
You can split it up however you want, split it up.
How?
You can split it however you want.
No. You give me the details.
No, you want me to give you the six blocks?
No. Give me the details of how they were built by the government.
If you can give me the details of how the one that they were lost, how the law said, that's where we like the details.
No. You are claiming that the government built six office blocks.
Yeah.
How? Central government. The central government paid for six office blocks in Barbados.
Well, if the men pay for them, they will pay for them. Remember the judicial center that bringing a lot of controversy now was built too, you know. The Coast Guard was built too, you know.
So you are saying that these are bold projects. That's basically what you're saying.
I ain't saying nothing, Mr. Ellis.
Anyhow, let's move on. What's the next point you're going to make?
Yeah, but you ain't disputing that they built six office blocks and still on them.
I don't understand. I understand that the government has been involved in bold projects built by the private sector. And
for
then
government.
And for government, and after a number of years, these properties would then revert to government. That's my understanding. For you to come and say that they built six office blocks is inconsistent with what I've been told. So anyhow.
Well, Mr. Ellis, you know, there's things that we need to split hairs over. The six buildings are there standing. The six buildings are there standing, and they're there for government.
And so
nobody
what?
Nobody can't padlock neither one of them.
But if they're not owned by the government yet?
Well, we can split hairs over that. We ain't owned the judiciary building neither. Oh. No, we ain't owned the Coast Guard neither. If you want, go that road.
And I have no difficulty with saying that.
Oh, good. All right, cool.
I don't understand why you all try to confuse people with these things.
Nobody is confusing nobody, Mr. Ellis.
Proceed. Let me hear the rest of what you guys say, do.
Right. No, I wanted to take it. No, it was waxing warm.
You got a lot more time, though, because a whole set of callers say, and you've had time before the news.
Mr. Ellis, I was holding on about 2.5 hours.
That has nothing to do with how much time you have on air.
Well, Mr. Ellis, if you want to limit the time, I can go.
It has nothing to do with what time you have on air. Go ahead.
When you're ready, stop me, Mr.
Yeah, but I'm just giving you a flag to say to you, look, you know, you have a limited time, so try to get what you have to say within that time.
Man, I got a lot to say, and I can tell you between here and when the bell rings, it can be strictly fast bowling. So if you can't handle it, get somebody else to help you handle it.
Well, all I'm asking you to do when it comes to handling it is to take note of the fact that you don't have a whole day to say what you got to say.
Well, when Mr. Beckham come in again, I don't get involved
in that right now. Tell me what you proceed with the time that you have available and let's move on.
No, you fight or you was waxing warm, but oversight, and who can do the oversight now and who do the oversight and whatever. Mr. Ellis, the ministries, the permanent secretary is who does oversee the spending in the ministries. The ministers can't sign the checks for government. They can sign an agreement, but they can't sign a check. And you're well aware of this, you know. You remember there's a man, see, that the Tory Reverend that gone to his grave a wounded man. After spending $8 million in oversight, they could not lay in Parliament because it would have vindicated him. And everybody believed he did do everything wrong, but there was no proof of it. And you know that they have very well. So when you come now to look at all this oversight, the same oversight that was used then will be used now that the permanent secretary would oversee their particular department. But anyhow, you want to get into something here with you about Miss Smartley. Now, Miss Smartley had said boldly, unprovoked, it's too late and near the end of the term to make any appointments. And if to make any appointments, she's going to overturn them. You're aware of that?
I'm aware.
Yes, good, cool, Lord, good. We're on even keel here. And she was looking at, I think she had actually called up some of the labels, some, but there was like the governor of the central bank and even the governor general, director of public prosecutions, and you can even infer public servants and whatever. There was a whole list of appointments since she said that. Do you think that she would still be inclined to overturn them?
I can't speak for her.
I asked what you think, and asked you know.
I can't think for her.
You don't got to think for her, you're thinking for yourself.
You asked me if I think she would, but you are asking me to think for her.
No, not for her. And I'm not sure if she can do it or she can do it.
You don't ask me if you think she should. You ask me if I think she would. I don't know.
She would be inclined to do it. That's what
I
say.
I don't know. I assume so. The Prime Minister said he wasn't giving us back in the days. He don't believe in it. And I believe that he was serious about what he said. So she may be serious too. The challenge that they face is that once people are appointed, it is a very difficult thing to reverse their appointments. So you can find yourself with a whole host of people who are given new contracts, sometimes 5-year contracts, sometimes longer they may get, and it may be difficult because to get out of those contracts, you're going to have to pay the people. So you can find yourself in a situation where, as a BLP administration, you're saddled with a whole set of people in what you consider to be sensitive positions who you can't touch, because the alternative to that is to pay them out. Or you could do like what was done by the Democratic Labour Party. Remember when they come and fired people and then the people went to court and won the cases against them? That, you could do that too. But it's the taxpayers who have to pay, because when politicians do that, they don't pay out of their own pocket. One day, I hope they will have to do that. But in the meantime, they can do as they like.
So if you had to advise her now, what would you advise her?
I'd tell her, come straight to Straker's Tenantry and talk to you.
Come straight to me?
Yes, because you're the man.
No, I am not the man. I ain't none of her advisors.
You're the man.
You know what
I would say to her? Listen, this man has been a Dem, so he claims. He's been a Dem all his life. You have been all your life?
I told you that, Mr. Ellison.
Right. He's been a Dem all of his life.
I told you.
If you really want to make a difference in that particular part of the constituency, the key is to find out what it is that will cause him to switch parties. Once you have been able to establish that, you will have somebody who will become a key advisor to you. So go. Your mission is to change this man.
Mr. Ellis, I can assure you it cannot be done. Because you don't listen to me.
I hear better cocks than you, Crow.
No, I said clearly my grandfather.
Man, listen, I got a friend. Well, I hope he's still my friend. Who has been a BLP man for so many years. One major change took place, and he's a dyed-in-the-wool Dem, or so he appears to be. And there are others like that. So I don't understand what you're telling me, how impossible it is.
Mr. Ellis, because, you know, if you just listen to me, you would understand, you know. My grandfather was one that used to organize rallies and collect money and things for Gradley and all that. So, you know, it started
so in... So, you got BLP blood in you already.
Half of my family is being...
You got BLP blood already.
But no, but listen to this. When Errol Barber come on the scene, my mother asked him, if you vote for somebody, if somebody will know. And foolish, he tells you no. And she vote with Errol Barber. So, I come along with Errol Barber. And they ain't a change in, Mr. Allen.
All right, let's move on. Thank you very much.